Just since you've raised that subject, how would one in those days get from the Delta into Vancouver? Was there any other way than going through New Westminster?
Yes, there was a ferry system out of Woodward's Landing.
Even at that time, eh?
Oh, that goes way back, yes. Yeah.
Woodward's Landing now.
That was on the Delta side.
Ladner.
Which is now Ladner, or near Ladner.
Near Ladner, that's right.
So that ferry would take you over to...
Actually, not too far away from the Dease Tunnel, where the Dease Tunnel actually is today.
Would it be west of the Dease Tunnel?
Oh, in the same vicinity. I can't say that, Don. But in the same vicinity, and it took you across from the Delta side to the Richmond side.
And then you'd go by road across Richmond, and then would there be a bridge at Eburn or Marpole
yes,
or somewhere?
It was a very rickety, small old bridge, and it's gone now, there was a bridge there at that time, and the Oak Street Bridge now replaces it, you see.
But the main channel...
Well, used to go down and around, and there was no straight highway at all or a freeway. But in those days, you had lots of time anyhow.
Okay. So they were married at Christ Church Cathedral, and when would that have been?
That was in 1909.
I think so,
1909. Yeah.
Okay, and where did they first settle then?
Oh, they settled in the house in Delta, where we were all born.
The one on...
Embry Road.
Embry Road, okay.
And the freeway now.
Right, okay. Well, can you tell us then, switching gears a little bit, about how you got involved in the automobile business? And in fact, your whole career, your working career. Did it start with the automobile business?
Well, I finished high school, as I told you. Then I took a spot job business course. And I found myself fooling around down in the pool hall come Christmas time, and I said, this is...
Where? Pool hall where?
On Hastings Street, down where the spot job school was, down about Homer.
Hastings and Homer?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I said, I guess I've done enough of this, I better go to work. And...
You would have been, what, about 20 or...?
No, I just turned 15.
Okay, yeah, you graduated and you're 14.
Yeah, well, I was 14, but I was 15 that November, you see. So, there was a fellow... we had a Vera Fenton. Remember Vera living with us?
Yeah.
And she had a friend who was courting her by the name of, was it Russ Baker?
Yeah, Baker anyway.
Baker was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked for Bell and Mitchell on the ground floor of the Rogers Building at 470 Granville.
Bell and Mitchell?
Bell and Mitchell.
What were they?
They were in the insurance business.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an opening there for a office boy, assistant, bookkeeper, that sort of thing. And so, he said, would you be interested? And I said, sure. So I got the job, January the 1st. I don't know what paid, not very much money, but anyhow, that the summer of 27, we had our holidays coming up, and five of us took off for California. Mother had just got a brand new 1927 Chrysler 60 four-door sedan. And just imagine loaning that to a kid 16, eh?
She had a lot of confidence in you.
Yeah, she sure did.
Now, who were the others in
there? Well, there was Arthur Brown John, Jack Whalen, Stu Gillies, and Duncan Crux.
Okay.
The guy who ended up in jail, the lawyer. So we took off, and we were gone for 2 weeks, and we had $40 apiece in our pockets when we left. And we come back with a few pennies 2 weeks later.
Yes.
And we slept out some nights, and I remember the Manx Hotel in San Francisco. Remember that one on Powell Street?
Manx, is it?
Manx, yeah. We stayed there, the whole bunch of us. No, Dr. Clark stayed. He stayed in Seattle, he was all the way. The four of us stayed there for $2 a night.
Uh-huh. Isn't that incredible? In total or each?
Oh, $2 total.
My God, 50 cents each.
Yeah. And the hotel is still there. Last time I was down, every time I go down, I always go and take a look at it.
How do you spell it?
M-A-N-X.
Yeah, on Powell, would it be down
below,
around Union?
Below Union Square? Yeah, below Union Square, below the St.
Market
Francis.
Street?
Below the St. Francis.
Yeah, down towards Market Street.
Right.
Okay. My God, I'm going to have to put that up. Probably a real flea bag place today with...
No, it doesn't, you know? It doesn't look like it. No, it's
really
clean and nice to
really?
Use. Yeah, yeah. Anyhow, we came back from California with a few cents left in our pocket.
Were you driving most of the time, Unc?
Yeah, most of it, but we changed around.
Yeah. What route would you take in those days?
Oh, we went down the coast.
Down the Washington, Oregon coast?
Yeah, yeah.
Through the Redwood Forest?
Through the Redwoods, yeah. And we went through Bakersfield, too.
Yes.
Remember that? Looking back now.
So you went way further.
And ended up coming to Los Angeles through Hollywood.
Okay.
Out of the mountains down through Hollywood.
Yes.
I still remember that in the Christie's. That's 10 or 15 years ago. No. 60 years ago. But anyhow, I got back. In the meantime, my Uncle Claire was in the automobile business in Westminster, and I was doing a little moonlighting and selling automobiles at night.
For Claire?
Yeah. And by the time I got back, you know, I was making more money selling automobiles at night than Bell and Mrs. were paying me full time. And then Claire had a bookkeeper. His name was Allendale. He was a son of a former mayor. And they ran a store in Westminster. T.S. Allendale, remember?
Yeah.
But this fellow was a young fellow, but he up and died. So Claire didn't have a bookkeeper. And this was 1927. He says, you know, you better quit that place over there and come and work for me and take care of the books and sell automobiles. So I said, okay, that's the deal. So I came back from California in 27 and gave Bell and Mitchell a week's notice, and I got home. I was leaving it. I'd be taking my holidays. And so that's how I got into Westminster and got into the deal, and I kept the books there until...
Now, at that time, what was the name of the dealership?
C.C. Brown Chrysler Sales and Service.
So that'd be Claire, C. C would be... Cecil Claire. And where was that located?
On Columbia Street at the foot of 4th Street.
Okay. Well, when I was a kid, I remember you had a place on Blackie Street.
That was after that. That place that he built there in 1927 burnt down in October of 31. And then we went to Blackie Street.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed on Blackie Street until I built the place off Columbia Street in 1950.
Well, then... How did it happen then that you ended up owning it? He passed on.
And February the 15th, 1932, he took a heart attack and died like that.
Okay.
It was fast, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was.
Young dude.
And so I took over at that point.
Now, on that subject, do you happen to know how Cecil Claire got started in the automobile business, because that took a little capital and
not that much capital in those days, and he started out.
Did he give up his part of this farm?
No, he kept the farm.
Yeah.
I ultimately bought the farm.
Oh.
Where was that farm?
That was the old original homestead Brown farm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But he owed his mother some money, so he deeded the 5 acres for the house to her. That was hers. Mm-hmm. He borrowed some money. I guess he borrowed the money from her to start the automobile business. Mm-hmm. Because the old gal had quite a lot of money. You know.
Yeah, I think she was much.
She had one of the biggest accounts they had in the...
This is your grandmother?
Yeah, Saint Sarah. So he borrowed some money for her to get started. And of course, it didn't take very much money to get started when you can buy an automobile for $700 or $800.
And that was always a Chrysler franchise?
No. He was Page and Jewett to start.
Page and Jewett.
Chrysler didn't come in until 25.
I see.
He started in 1923.
Okay.
With Page and Jewett, and then And Chrysler came to Canada in 1925, and that's when he took Chrysler on.
I see. So you operated that business then from, what did you say, 32?
I went to work in 1927. I took it over in 1932 and sold it in 1959.
And by that time you'd moved up to that beautiful new building up on Columbia Street near the Patella Bridge. And you built that, you say. You made that big move from Blackie Street, because that place on Columbia must have been considerably larger than Blackie Street, huh?
Oh, yes, sure was, but still not big enough for today's automobile business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as I understand things, you still own that property, that land and that building.
That's right. And, the government is going to take it away from me sometime in the next year to build the new light rapid transit, because the new bridge across the Fraser comes right into that property.
So it's going to be a station?
No.
Oh, no.
It's going to be the jump-off point for Coquitlam and for Surrey.
A junction, as it were, in the line.
Yeah.
And this is the same rapid transit system that's now being built for Expo 86.
That's right. It's built from Vancouver to Westminster. And I rode on 3 weeks ago from the Dome Station to Westminster in 18 minutes.
Is that a fact? Yeah, we had a good look at that coming in by air a week ago. We went right over the spine of Burnaby, and you could see that line right below us.
And if you want to really see the scenery, you want to ride that thing coming up through East Vancouver, looking back over the harbor and the mountains.
Oh, I would think
that. And all those big high-rise office buildings.
Be spectacular.
And then when you get up to the center of Burnaby, you look down over the Fraser River and the Fraser Delta and Point Roberts Bank. And it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, I always thought the rapid transit deal should be underground, but this one up above ground is really something.
Is that on the line of the old interurban?
The old BC Electric.
The old right-of-way, they've maintained it, and this is now being used.
And they still have the other line is still there. This is built on the side of it, you see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see, right alongside, not on the old roadbed.
No. Well, it's on the right-of-way.
Yes.
But there's still room to move freight trains if you want.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, then, you also, in addition to operating that dealership over the years, were very involved in civic affairs. You might want to tell us a little bit about that with the organizations you belong to.
Well, I was elected a park commissioner, I guess, in 1940. I served there for 3 years. I was president of the Rotary Club in 1941-42. And I joined the Rotary Club in 1929. That's 56 years ago. And joined the Westminster Club in 1934. That's 51 years ago. And joined the Board of Fate in 1932. That's 53 years ago. Let's say president.
Taping of Uncle Chris, and he was just describing the service organizations he belonged to. In Westminster.
With Bobby Boucher, I was co-founder of the Totem Figure Skating Club in 1939. Throughout the war years, I was co-chairman of the Citizens Committee for Victory Loan Drives with Doug Grimston, president of the Crescent Beach Swimming Club for 2 years.
And I remember you were involved in the P&E for a while, too.
Well, I was the director of the Pacific National Exhibition for 12 years.
From what year? What years?
1961 to 73.
And then...
I'd forgotten about that.
And then Unc...
And then one of the co-founders of Western Cable Vision in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
One of the original shareholders.
And you were also very involved, as I recall, with the Liberal Party?
Yes, over the years I've had a bit of an involvement there. My first campaign was 1930 for the late Senator Reid, so I've got 55 years in there.
So what did you do for Senator Reid? And just describe your progression of activities through the years with the party.
Oh, well, I was active in the party and president of the New Westminster Liberal Association, both federally and provincially, and I was campaign chairman for Tom Reed at least twice. He never lost an election. He ran first in 1930, and the last one was 45. I was chairman there. Then he went to the Senate following that. I was chairman of Boss Johnson's campaign, the premier of the province, for two terms.
Was he from New Westminster, Boss Johnson?
Yes, Gilley Brothers. Mm-hmm. He ran Gilley Brothers in New Westminster and then ultimately moved to Vancouver to Ocean Cement. But he lived in New Westminster right down the street from where we did. He was on the corner first in Queens, and we were first in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And I was secretary of the Liberal Party in British Columbia for a number of years, and I was on the national executive for a number of years, and I was chief fundraiser in the province of British Columbia for a number of years, both federally and provincially.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think those are the years that I remember, and stories that I heard were that nobody in the history of the Liberal Party ever raised more money for the Liberal Party than you did.
Well, I guess that's true, but of course the dollars were getting, so you know, $10 a night, I said, weren't any more than four or five a few years back, but I did raise a few million bucks over the years.
Mm-hmm. And then at one time, do I recall that you ran for office?
And that was in 1965, and you became very involved in that campaign.
I remember it very well.
And I lost the election, but I got trifurcation for the Fraser River, which has been the biggest thing that's ever happened. That's what's made the port.
What do you mean, trifurcation?
Well, that's training works in the river to eliminate dredging.
Yes.
The central part of the river in the New Westminster area used to dredge over a million yards a year, and now they don't dredge anything. And that's a commitment I got from the federal government when I ran, that if I would carry the flag, they would see that the Fraser River got trifurcation.
I see.
And then, of course, I end up being chairman of the Harbor Commission to get all the benefit of the whole deal. So
trifurcation was important because it really could allow the big ships to come in?
Well,
is that?
No, it's a training works program where when the river widens out, you build training works that narrow it, constrict it, so they speed the flow of the water.
Yes.
So the sediment goes through in suspension instead of dropping out.
I see.
The river widens out. It slows down the current and the sediment drops out.
I understand.
And it has to be dredged. If you constrict it, the flow is kept going and the sediment in suspension keeps going right straight down.
Because the speed of that water it speeds it up, I suppose.
That's right. That's right. When it's constricted, it goes faster than if it's.
Yes.
It's like, you know, it spreads out over a whole plane while it slows down to a walk.
Do I recall you had, you know, speaking of the Fraser, didn't you have something to do with that? Weren't you involved in the barrel race down the Fraser River?
Yes, the Rotary Club ran that first in 1941 when I was just new as president. It had been run the year before by Harry Sullivan, Tom Trapp, and Jack Booth, cartoonist of the province. And it was run in aid of the Spitfire Fund. But it became quite apparent to them it was altogether too big for three people. So since we knew all the people involved, Jack Booth's dad was a charter member of the bank and the Rotary Club, it was turned over to us. I was president the first year of the run, and lots had done Labor Day from Lytton in September of 1941.
And the idea was, as I recall, you had to guess how long it would take the barrel to get from Lytton down to where?
To a line, a flotilla bridge, really.
Yes.
And of course it was quite a barrel, a steel barrel filled with cork and the rest of it, batteries with a light on top, so you got to be able to find it, see it at night, you see, so the light on, and flagstaff and flag. And it was very heavy construction. It had to be battered against all those rocks in the canyon right going down. Then we had a convoy party went along with it to see it through, and so many hours in a whirlpool, and you pushed it out. And the Westminster Regiment used to supply a team that would follow it down. And I remember one year, of course, leaving on a Monday, and the average time was about 72 hours. So it was just about a natural to come in. Rotary Club lunches were on Thursday, so 72 hours later was Thursday noon. And one year it came in really on the button, and we took the old Samson, the paddle wheeler, took the whole Rotary Club aboard, courtesy of the Department of Public Works, with basket lunches, and went out and were there at the finish line when it crossed for the luncheon.
Well, now, when you say the Spitfire fund, what do you mean by that?
Well, it was the Spitfire was the fighter aircraft.
The aircraft
that Britain was using, and the fund was sent to Britain.
You were raising money to help build.
That was the year before. Mm-hmm. We never got into the Spitfire fund.
I see. It started.
We got into the Queen. Oh, we got into lots of things. Well, we got into the Queen's Canadian Fund, which first of all was a fund really for Her Majesty the Queen to use in aid of civilians that were in trouble because of the war in Britain. Mm-hmm. And she had a committee all set up, and that's where the funds went. Mm-hmm. And this was for civilian people that had a problem due to the war in London and thereabouts. Oh. And then we were into the cigarette fund once too, for the soldiers overseas. That was another one that'd be a no-no today.
Yes, yes.
It wasn't then.
Worthy cause then.
Yeah.
And then, Unc, you all of your career, really, both in terms of your commercial career and your service contributions, were all centered on the Fraser River, more or less, with Newest Minster and your dealership really overlooking the river.
Oh, yeah.
And you ran for Parliament for a riding that was on the river, was it not?
Well, it was both sides of the river and a long way up, Madame, both sides.
And as I recall, you had tough competition in that year because you ran against an incumbent, a very heavily entrenched incumbent by the name of Barry Mather.
That's right, a columnist in the Sun.
He had a lot.
Front page and all the rest of it.
So you
I carried the flag, let's say.
Yeah, and you sure as hell picked a tough competitor.
I'm not so sure that I was unhappy about that. I don't think I really wanted to win. Who the hell would want to live in Ottawa?
Yeah, right.
But that's how I became a harbor commissioner.
Okay, now that's what I was leading up to. Tell
us. I remember meeting Lester Pearson at your headquarters on King George Highway.
Well, it was the old Safeway parking lot, as I recall.
On King George, yeah.
I remember being there that day too, Dad, and the incident I remember was that we had Kelly in my arms. Kelly must have been 65, she would have been 3, I guess. And Kelly was, I guess Lester Pearson came through the crowd and he spotted Kelly. And he went right over and gave Kelly a great big kiss. And as soon as he turned his back and walked away, Kelly looked at me and she said, "Dad, he's prickly." Of course, he'd been flying all night and hadn't shaved that morning or something. And he had still half a growth of beard on. And so we've never forgotten that line in our household. But that was a great thrill the day that he came by as Prime Minister to shake everybody's hand. Of course, he was a great Prime Minister. And then, tell us how it happened then that you spent many years serving as chairman of the Fraser River Harbors Commission.
Well, it's I guess I was lucky that I was liberal in those days, because if you weren't liberal, you didn't get anywhere. Today, you're not so good as a liberal.
The tide turns, comes in and it goes out, it comes back in.
Well, I couldn't have been at a better time, you see, so I got asked if I would serve on the Harbor Commission, and I said I wouldn't force that, sold my business and didn't have any ties in that area, and I was involved in cable too, and I didn't need an income, or I'd never become a harbor commissioner. You sure can't live on that one.
Well, isn't that almost a voluntary job?
Well, yeah, it's not so bad now. When I first went, I got $150 a month, and now I get $500.
Yes. So when was that? When did you begin that position?
November the 1st, 1965.
65. So 20 years.
Over 20. 21 next February.
And tell us then what you did in that role.
Well, I suppose you do what anybody does as chairman of a board of directors. That's actually what it amounts to. You oversee the show, hire and fire staff, and make the policy and See, the staff carries it up. That's what it's been. It's been a most interesting 20 years, that's for sure. And, I wouldn't have missed it for anything.
I remember seeing your picture on the front page of the business section of the Toronto Globe and Mail. This would be a few years ago now, but my recollection is at one point you served as an officer of all of the harbors commissions across Canada.
Well, I was president of the Important Harbor Association. I was president of the Pacific Coast Association of Port Authorities. Mm-hmm. I've been a director of the American Association of Port Authorities and the International Association of Ports and Harbors.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been involved with all the major associations. And they're meeting here Canadian Port and Harbor in Vancouver in August, and the Pacific Coast Association meeting in Nanaimo in August too. And both organizations are having a reception for me honoring me in my retirement.
That's coming up fairly soon?
Next month.
Yeah?
Two of them.
Unc, tell me, during your 20 years or over 20 years on the Fraser River Harbors Commission, what happened to the port during those 20 years?
Well, of course, when I first was nominated for the position, there was no Fraser River Harbor Commission. It was the New Westminster Harbor Commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
And it was simply the New Westminster Port. Well, there'd been agitation from all the municipalities in the jurisdiction. You see, our jurisdiction is from the mouth up to the Pitt Lake on the Pitt River, and up to the other side of Haney, up to Kanaka Creek, which is a big area. It's 135 miles of shoreline.
Yes.
And all these, there's nine municipalities on that in that jurisdiction, and they all want a representation on the Harbor Commission. So this is what brought about the 64 or 65 Harbor Commissions Act.
I see.
Which changes over so that the federal government, from a five-man commission, appointed three people, and the municipalities appointed two. And that I took over in February the 1st, 65, under the New Westminster Harbor Commissioners. And April it changed to the Fraser River Harbor Commission.
Okay.
And we brought the new commissioners aboard. So that the big change was made there. Now, as far as New Westminster is concerned, of course, with bigger ships and the change and the whole transport system to sea. You have to have at least 15 acres behind every berth to make it functional.
Mm-hmm.
And here was New Westminster with 10 berths with only 40 acres, so it just couldn't survive economically in the new show. So the Pacific Coast Terminal sold their property off to BC Development Corporation, and that was the end of the Port business in New Westminster, and they moved up to Port Moody into a bulk terminal deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we built the Fraser Surrey docks across the river, and the tonnage hasn't gone down, it's gone up, and the Annex is out of terminals. So the terminal facilities are now located in different areas in the river, but there's nothing left in New Westminster.
Where are the biggest docks in along the Fraser now?
Well, Fraser Surrey. Right.
That's on the east side or the south side?
Yeah.
Of the Fraser?
You're actually right when you say east, but
yeah.
It's closer to the east than it is south, but everybody figures it's south.
Yeah, and that's really opposite New Westminster then?
Yeah, just a little bit below on opposite. And then the Annis's auto terminals, that's the terminal for automobiles. That's the largest in North America.
Mm-hmm.
125 acres.
And you offload cars coming in from
everything
Japan
under,
and so
everything
on.
Everything under the sun, yeah.
Yeah.
Except Toyota. They have their own wharf.
Where is that?
Down at Fraser Wharf, down near the East Tunnel.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And is that within your jurisdiction?
Yes.
Okay. But do I take it then that the Harbors Commission owns the Annis's facility?
Yeah. We own the Fraser Surrey facility, but we don't run anything.
You contract that out?
Them all out on management contracts where we take a percentage of the dollars going through the till with the guarantee.
But the capital to build it came from the federal coffers?
From the Harbor Commission, and we borrowed it from the Toronto Dominion Bank.
Oh, really?
Not from Ottawa.
Commercial loan then?
Yeah.
Does a guarantee come from Ottawa at all? You stand on your own then as the Harvest Commission?
Or the money on the basis of my signature and the Secretary's.
That's interesting, eh?
Yeah, and that's what they're going to celebrate on the 13th of September up in the Big Black Tower.
Well, just this last year, I remember reading that you were given an award for the Citizen of the Year for New Westminster. Now, was it this, would it be last year?
For 1984, yes, the Chamber of Commerce selected me as Citizen of the Year for New Westminster.
And I suppose, I'm guessing now, but largely for the contribution you made to the city, as you've described earlier on this tape, or are there things we don't know about?
All the various things I've been involved in, yeah.
And then also, I read that you were invited to Victoria to receive an award from the Lieutenant Governor. What was that about?
Yes, well, we were invited to dinner at the Lieutenant Governor's residence. He didn't make the presentation. It was made by the Minister for the Environment. And it wasn't an award to me, but I accepted it on behalf of the Commission. It was an award to the Commission for a process that we've developed in treating leachate out of sanitary landfills so they become non-toxic before they hit the river. And we apparently have developed quite a system because we have people, engineers and environmentalists coming from all over the world to look at it. So we're quite proud of that.
Now, can you describe to a dumb layman like me more or less how that system, that process works?
Well, it's it costs us a couple of million bucks, I guess, but it's a matter of taking the leachate, containing it all within the site to start with, and then running it through a system of canals and that sort of thing, and then aerating it, putting it through sprinklers and sprinkling it over mounds of sand, and finally it gets in the river after it's been all through this process. That's basic and simply what it is.
I see.
But it's been quite a complicated show to arrive at, and expensive.
And Unc, on the subject of awards, is what's the other one that you received?
Well, I got two others. It's an award of merit for my contribution to the transportation industry, and I won it both provincially and nationally. In other words, I won it for the province of British Columbia, the Yukon Territories, and the Northwest Territories, and then for all Canada.
When was that?
That was about 2 months ago.
My gosh, really? And is there any particular reason you were singled out for it? Was it all related to the Harbors Commission?
Yes, on the transportation field, it would relate to the Harbors Commission because I served on the task force for the new legislation for 5 years from 1975 to 1980, and I wasn't able to convert them to going my way, but I pulled all the Harbors Commission's up. They went their way, so they're happy about it.
Okay. And what's the other award then?
Well, it's the same thing.
Oh, I see. Provincially and federally.
It's development of the Fraser River and transportation.
Right.
But this deal in Ottawa was just part of it. But I have been involved, you see, now for over 20 years in transportation. That's the harbor.
And how would the port of New Westminster rank in terms of tonnage going through relative to other ports up and down the west coast of North America?
Well, in B.C., of course, we'd be third, because you've got to remember that Prince Rupert and Vancouver, of course, are always banked. They're big bulk terminals.
Yes.
We're not in the bulk bits at all. We're into general cargo and that sort of thing. But so the big bulk deal, grain and coal, leaves us right out of that. But when it comes to general cargo, you know, we're not that far behind Vancouver.
Yeah, and in other words, in terms of value, dollar value, if you've got automobiles and so on coming in.
From a revenue point of view, there's lots more money in what we deal in. There's very little margin in
bulk commodities.
Yeah, like oil going through a pipeline, there's a revenue to somebody, but it's pretty small for you.
Now, one other thing I'd like to get on this tape, Hunt, is the history of the family down here at Crescent Beach. Now, here we're sitting at Mother and Dad's place on O'Hara Lane, but the history goes back a lot farther than that. Can you fill us in there?
Well, Fee, when did we first come down here? Joe Brown owned the place just two doors down the east from here that he sold to Dr. Thompson. Somebody else bought it since, I guess.
Do you know when he would have come down, Joe Brown?
He built the place originally, and that would have been, I guess, around the start of the war.
Well, we were at...
when we came down.
Yeah.
Would he have come down as a summer home?
Yes, from Colebrook, just across the water over here. He had for the kids to come down and learn to swim and that sort of thing. Now, when did we come down there? 1917, I guess it was. And,
And then we were there.
Joe
Mother
had
loaned
us the place, and then Mother
bought that.
The kids liked the place so much that
she loved
she
it
got,
too.
Yeah, she did too. That this place right behind, well, behind Nelson's here. Mm-hmm.
On McBride Street.
On McBride.
Opposite Dick Nelson's home.
Yeah, and it was a double house at the time.
Yes.
Klutz and I forgot.
They're from Westminster too. Klutz and their
boys. Pioneer family in New Westminster, mm-hmm. Anyhow.
Yeah.
And you were living in New Westminster at that time.
Yeah, and so she bought it and converted it to a single family building.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Next year.
How would you have gotten across?
I didn't spend much time down here, though. No. I went to the farm in the summertime.
Which farm?
Brown's, Claire Brown's. It's
Claire's, okay.
Over there, and Marjorie, I guess, spent a lot of time in Crystal's, too.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But your mother and Molly and Buster spent a lot of time down
here. That's right.
Yeah.
And how in those days would you get across the Fraser from at New Westminster?
Oh, you had the old railway bridge. It was
the Great Northern Bridge?
Yes,
or?
Yes, public works now. But they had a traffic lane above the actual railway bridge. And it was very narrow and constricted, and for instance, you couldn't go across if you were a certain width. And trucks had to, if they went across, they picked up some sort of a dewey on one end, and when that was gone, nobody else could go, you see. And
I see.
They'd go across one at a time each way. And that was the old railway bridge with a vehicle traffic on the upper level.
Which is where the Patella Bridge is now.
No, the railway bridge is still there, but they took off the deck to carry the automobiles.
I see.
And they built the Patella Bridge alongside.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah. So you came.
And Joe Brown was the first automobile across the old railway bridge when they put the traffic deck on.
Really?
He was
That's
the first in line at the south end.
Oh,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So your Uncle Joe built this place. You liked it down here. Noni liked it here.
Yes,
yeah,
she loved it.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she bought the place across the lane.
Yeah.
What, the next summer?
Same summer.
1917.
So
they
had it
remodeled
next year.
Yeah.
She had it remodeled, and see, it was split right down the middle, two families, one each side.
Now, who would have lived here in those days that still might be around? The Pioneer families,
the Gillies.
You call it the Gillies?
Yeah.
How about the Grimstons? Were they down here then?
No, the Grimstons didn't come down here until the 40s or so.
Or the...
But of course, Doug married a Gilly, so there was that connection.
Doug Grimston.
Yeah,
did you
Mary
see Bea Gilly here on...
Yeah, I sure did. I talked to her. Isn't she tremendous?
She sure is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How about the Abernethys or the...
Yes, the Abernethys were certainly down here at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gales are no longer here.
The Walkers? Are they around?
No, they weren't down at that
not,
time.
Not
they
yet.
They came later.
Or the Nelsons?
Yes, Nelsons were here. They were down way down on the riverfront.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, Dick's
Dad,
father,
yeah.
old Richie Nelson.
Richie Nelson, that's right.
They had the fishing company in the Fraser.
Yeah, B.C. Packers. Nelson Brothers and then...
B.C. Packers bought them out?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Then for years, Richie ran B.C. Packers, but nobody knew that.
How about the Wixons? Were they here in the early days?
Yes, I guess they were.
I think they must have been.
Yeah.
And the kids?
We're so far away.
Yes,
from
the kids. Oh, yes, Overweighty. Yeah,
oh, the kid family, they're involved in Overweighty tea?
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they were the people that supplied the kid medals.
Kid medals, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the old gal down at Tag Everett, there's an annual meeting down there once.
Oh, yeah.
And she was just able to get around, She came in and talked about the kid medals and.
Yeah.
She said, I'm not going to be around that much longer, but those two kids of mine are going to see if those medals are produced, or I'm going to be a very nasty ghost.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
That's a great line. And how about the Tingleys? Were they around in the early days?
Yeah, they were around for a long time.
And I have some over here.
Right behind the other side of it, right.
Yeah. Across from Noni's place, and over one or two houses. Right, up towards the tracks.
Yeah, and then,
no, not
and then Myrtle's family went to White Rock. They were in White Rock.
Which one?
Myrtle's family. Myrtle Davis.
Yeah.
They were White Rock. It was Steve.
Yeah, they always went to White
Hall's Rock. Family were here.
And then when did it take place, the what I call the development of Crescent Beach, or the subdividing, that I gather the old owner of this house, the Shelley.
Well, he cut it up pretty well, I think.
Yeah,
he got two for himself.
Two lots. Mm-hmm. And that's why you, I think, are probably the only people on the beach with two
lots
today.
That's right, yeah. But of course, mind you, he could have cut this in two if he wanted to and sold two lots to them.
He didn't want
it
though.
For himself, no.
He made enough on all the rest of it, I think.
Yeah, but they cleaned them, you know. Yeah. He was the guy home water in 1929.
Mm-hmm.
He and a group of friends were all in home water in a big way, and they all agreed they wouldn't sell. And every last rotten one of them sold all their stock to Shelley. He bought it all and ended up with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were all going to hang on to their stock. Nobody was going to sell, just to hold the market.
Like a voting trust almost.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of them sold their stock, and Shelley do his bit. Bought it up.
I see.
Ended up on the whole bloody works one worth Emily.
Yeah.
Margaret Shelley was down here with A.E. Hodgins for a week.
Oh, I see.
I didn't hear it till the end. I said, gosh, I'd like to see Margaret. She wanted to come down and see the house, too.
Oh, sure, she would.
It didn't work, though.
Leon, I guess, is in Toronto, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know what he does.
Now, if you were coming back and forth in Westminster, what would be the route? Which highway would you come down?
When we came down originally, we would come down the Johnston Road, or we would come down the Scott Road
Scott
and across
Road.
And over to the Johnston. There was no road across the Flats.
There was no King George Highway.
No King George Highway, no.
Right.
Though there was a road across the flats, that's right. You come across down the Scott Road and the old McCullum and then down the Woodward Hill.
Yeah.
And there was a dirt road. No pavement, it was all dirt
right.
Road.
It's still a dirt road.
No, across the flats now is the King George Highway.
Oh, that one, but I mean from...
Across Coldbrook, you mean?
Yeah,
oh, we could go down there, we came across the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have to cross the Serpentine and Nicklemackle, probably on a little old narrow bridge.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Unc, also we want to for certain get on this tape, your family, you were married when?
October 1935.
And you married?
Margaret Tremere.
Oh, she's the one you mentioned as the May Queen.
Yeah,
right. In New Westminster.
Yeah. And we lived in New Westminster, of course.
Three children.
Kids.
With three kids, or
Wendy
first
Christ
Wendy?
Christopher.
Wendy was born when?
February the 15th, 1938. Gretchen was born February the 15th, 1940. And Christopher March the 28th, 1944.
Okay, now they're all married now.
Yeah.
And Wendy married? Bill Nelms.
Bill Nelms, doctor. Gretchen married Michael O'Brien, a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Margaret married Margaret
nice
Bragg, girl. Who was a school teacher.
Yes.
I like Margaret very much.
Oh, she's a nice girl.
And your
grandchildren.
And your grandchildren now, then let's start, starting with Wendy's children.
She's got Sarah, who is going into third year university at UBC in the fall, and Martha.
Oh, Martha's my biking buddy.
Yeah, that's right. And
she's
Rebecca,
a dear.
Her younger sister. And they're both going to the special upgraded classes at Point Grey come September.
I see. That's with Bill and Wendy's move down here.
Yeah.
When Bill takes up his new job.
He's been out here since February.
He's been here, yes, at Vancouver General.
Yeah, and University of BC.
And then, Gretchen and Mike have, their children are?
They have Lael, who's going into her second year at Queens come September, and Kevin, who is at Brentwood,
Oh, over with Gerald.
Yeah.
And Graham, who's at home.
Oh, Graham's my other biking buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Christopher has two, is it?
Yeah, Jennifer and Susan.
And Jennifer's how old?
Jennifer is 11 and Susan is 8.
Okay.